Genesis 1:11, and God said, "Let the earth put forth grass, herbs yielding seed, and fruit trees bearing fruit after its kind," etc. God, as we have seen, has now constructed the first and the principal parts of man's house. Its roof, the heaven, is most beautiful, but it is not yet fully adorned. Its foundation is the earth. Its walls are the mighty waters on every side. God next makes provision for our food. He commands the earth to bring forth herbs and trees to bear fruit of every kind. Here you may again see why the earth was before called Tohu and Bohu, because it was as yet not only dark, but altogether barren of fruit. But mark what kind of food God prepares for us, namely, herbs and fruits of trees. I believe, therefore, that our bodies would have been much stronger and healthier if this surfeiting, and especially the eating of flesh of all kinds, since the flood, had not been introduced. For although the earth, after the sin of Adam, was cursed, and because still more corrupt after the flood, yet our food of herbs would have been much more refining, thin, and pure, had we still lived on them, than our gross feeding on flesh is now. It is quite evident that in the beginning of the world, the food of man was herbs, and it is equally evident that the herbs were created for the very end that they might be food for man. That the earth produces grain, trees, and herbs of every kind is the work of this day. Now, indeed, all things spring forth from the seed of their kind, but the original creation was wrought without any seed, by the simple power of the Word. Indeed, that seeds now put forth their plants is still the effect of the work of the original creation by the Word, and it is a work full of wonder and admiration, for it is a singular act of God's power that the grain, falling on the earth, springs forth in its time and brings forth fruit after its kind, and that like plants should be put forth from like seeds in an unceasing and unchanging order is sure proof that it is not the consequence of a chance creation, but the especial operation of divine providence. Hence, from wheat grows nothing but wheat, from barley nothing but barley, from the bean nothing but beans, for the same continuous and unaltered nature, order, and condition of each plant are constantly preserved. Philosophy knows nothing of the cause of all this, and attributes the whole to nature. We, however, well understand that nature was so created at the first by the power of the Word, that the seeds and forms of all plants might be exactly and perfectly preserved. Wherefore, not only are the first day waters of heaven multiplied, as there is need, but the first seeds are also multiplied, as God sees fit, and they all preserve their original form and nature with the utmost perfection. Here again, a question is frequently raised as to the time or season of the year in which the world was created, whether the creation was wrought in the spring or autumn. And although the opinions of men differ on this point, yet each one has his own reasons and conjectures. Those who prefer making autumn the season of creation consider that they prove their judgment to be correct from the fact that the trees, when first created, produced their fruit, for Adam and Eve ate of their fruit. They prove their opinion, moreover, to be the right one, as they think, by the argument that the works of God are perfect. Others will have it that the spring was the time of the creation because the spring is the most beautiful season of the year and is, as it were, the infancy and childhood of nature. Hence it is that the ancient poet Ovid describes the spring as being the originating cradle time of the world. Neither party, however, has sufficient ground for concluding their arguments to be exclusively right. For the sacred text supports both opinions, because it declares that the earth brought or budded forth, which certainly is not the time of autumn, but of spring. It also declares that fruits then existed, which it is equally certain is not the time of spring. Wherefore, my opinion is that such was the miracle wrought of God at the first creation of the world, that all these things existed at the one time. The earth budded forth, the trees blossomed, and the fruits in their perfection immediately and suddenly followed. And then the miracle ceased, and nature gradually fell into her regular order. Thus, all these herbs and trees are propagated by means of their seeds in the same kinds and forms as those in which they were first created. Hence, men reason wrongly when they argue from the natural to the supernatural effect, for the whole is to be attributed to the Creator and to His first creation work, in which He, at the same time, perfected the infant buddings of spring and the mature fruits of autumn, as far as the herbs and the fruits of the tree were concerned. Moreover, this state of things at the creation induced Hilary and others to conclude that the world stood forth suddenly at the word of God in all its full perfection, and that God did not employ 6 whole natural days in the work of creation. For the text compels us to confess that the trees, together with their fruits, existed on the same day Adam was created. But although all this was indeed wrought of God, very much more quickly than it is now, for this same work of God in our own age generally occupies 6 months of time, yet the text does not use the verb to fructify only, but also the verb to germinate. With reference, therefore, to this question concerning the time of creation, it is most probable that the spring was the season in which the world was first created. Hence the Jews begin their year at this season, making the first month of the spring the first of their year, that being the time of the year when the earth begins to open its bosom and all things in nature bud forth. Concerning this part of the creation, another question is also raised as to the time when the unfruitful or barren trees and herbs were created. For myself, I would not attempt to settle anything as to this point, but I will offer my opinion. I believe that all the trees were in the beginning good and fruitful, and that the beasts of the field and Adam had, as it were, one and the same table, and that they all fed on wheat, pulse, and the other nobler fruits, for there was then the greatest possible abundance of all these creatures. After the sin of Adam, however, God said for the first time to the earth that it should bring forth thorns and briars. Wherefore, there can be no doubt that we have so many trees and herbs which are of no use whatever for food as the divine punishment of that first sin of Adam. Hence it is that many have considered the whole original state of the earth paradise, on account of the blessing and the abundance which attended the first creation. Those who held this opinion affirmed that the expulsion of Adam from paradise was his being deprived of this happy state of the earth and placed among thorns, where frequently, after the greatest labor, scarcely any benefit is derived. On this matter, however, we shall speak hereafter. But with respect to the present question, I am quite inclined to think that all the trees were fruitful when first created. The curious reasoning of the men of our day is detestable. When they inquire in their arguments why it was that God adorned the earth with such fruits on the third day before he had garnished the heaven with stars, they affirm that such a part of the creation work belonged rather to the work of the sixth day, and that it would have been more appropriate, as the heaven was first expanded before the earth was brought forth, had the heaven been adorned before the earth. For they say that the adorning of the earth belonged more properly to the sixth day. Lyra would make here the subtle distinction that this was not the ornament of the earth, but the form of it. However, I doubt whether any such distinction can be admitted as satisfactory. My opinion is, as I have before said, the order adopted by God in all these things is not to be submitted to the exercise of any judgment of ours. Indeed, was not the heaven adorned with that light which was created on the first day? The light was assuredly the most beautiful ornament of the whole creation. In this sacred matter, I, therefore, much prefer that we consider the divine care and goodness exercised in our especial behalf, in that God prepared a habitation so beautiful for the man whom he was about to create before he created him, in order that when created, he might find a habitation already prepared and furnished for him, into which thus ready and garnished God led him when created, and commanded him to enjoy all the fruits and provisions of his ample abode. Thus on the third day were prepared the food and the storeroom. On the fourth day the sun and the moon were given for the service of man. On the fifth day dominion was committed to him over the fishes and the birds. On the sixth day the same dominion was entrusted to him over all the beasts, that he might use all the rich blessings of these creatures freely, according to his necessities. And as a return, God only required that man should acknowledge the goodness of his Creator and live in his fear and worship. This peculiar care of God over us and for us, even before we were created, may be contemplated rightly and with great benefit to our souls. But all conjectures, reasonings, and arguments upon the great subject of the creation are uncertain and fruitless. The same care for us is manifest in his spiritual gifts. For long before we are converted to faith, Christ, our Redeemer, rose and ascended above, and is now in the house of his Father, preparing mansions for us, that when we arrive there, we may find heaven furnished with everything that can complete our joy. Adam, therefore, not yet created, was much less able to think of his future good than even we are, for he as yet had no existence at all, whereas we continually hear all these things from the Word of God as promised to us. Let us look at the first creation of the world, therefore, as a type and figure of the world to come, and thereby let us learn the exceeding goodness of God, who thus benefits, blesses, and enriches us even before we are capable of thinking for ourselves. This solitude, care, liberality, and beneficence of God, both of our present and future life, are matters more becoming us to contemplate and admire than it is to enter upon speculations and conjectures as to the reason why God began to ornament the earth on the third day. Let these observations suffice concerning the work of the third day, in which a house was built and furnished for man. Now follow the remaining days, in which were appointed rulers to have dominion over the whole creation.